Good morning and welcome to House Majority Press Availability. Today is, I believe, day 39 of our 90-day session. So we're a little more than a third of the way through. Yesterday, as most of you noted in your columns and on TV, Senator Murkowski was here with us. She brought some of the concerns of what's going on at the federal level and what some of the effects it may have as far as the state level. And, you know, that causes us some concern as far as federal funding that may or may not be coming our way and what implications it has to not only Alaska as a Arctic state, but certainly military, Coast Guard, and just social programs across the state that rely heavily on federal funds. You know, as we get into this, I'm sure Steve will probably want to talk about what implications that may have on military bases, especially in his area, and also. You know, on where we go on energy. We're currently right now working the operating budget through the process. Looks like within about the next 2 weeks we'll have the operating budget on the floor and hopefully a package that's put together that we can send over to the Senate to allow them to start that process. Our chairman have been talking with the Senate chairman of the Finance Committee and trying to look at how we address the operating needs of the state, and certainly looking at the capital budget to determine what funding may be available and what projects go into that. So with that, Bill, you want to maybe talk a little bit about that and what else is going on in up in finance?
It's a predominating our proceedings have been the budget. Very little legislation. We're going to continue this next week with having a review by the Department of Administration about the implications, both on an annual basis and the legacy costs of some of the contract revisions. We won't be taking an action on it, but when we're looking at budgets and the impacts of actions that the administration takes, and that through the bargaining process and other existing statutes, what are the long-term impacts and how they affect our goals of a sustainable budget. And if we don't have our eye on that piece, then we can't really take an accurate look on what our whole budget picture. And they are some significant large numbers. There was a Senate presentation that in Senate Finance. We're going to have a similar one in House Finance because it's, I think, worth taking a second look and making sure everybody, folks from the Senate who didn't see it and the public who didn't see it, there's some very sobering numbers and projections within those. I'm not suggesting we have a tool to, or maybe we don't even have the ability, but we don't know what the implications are. How do we even look at the budget process?
Steve?
Well, it's an exciting year. We're trying to get relief for energy for the interior of Alaska and the bush areas, and I think we have some real good bills that are moving through the session right now. It's something that's very important, not only to my District 3 up in Fairbanks, but also to the entire northern part of the state. We are working on trucking natural gas, LNG plant up in Prudhoe. And that plant would supply Fairbanks, but it also has the possibilities, and the Tanana Chiefs Conference has got behind it because of the amount of villages on the river system that could tap into and have propane put to their places through the summer for reducing their energy cost. TOC has indicated they would like to see some LNG brought down there. All of this would bring relief for the high energy cost up in the northern region. So this is something that we're looking at that is very exciting. We're hoping to see that move forward this year. Plus, we have the gas line bill for the so-called bullet line, but that is exciting too because that would bring lower priced energy than even the trucking. but it's a little further out, and the trucking would give us the opportunity to do the build-out in Fairbanks. So we're back in both of those projects and want to see those go because they're very important to the entire state. And those are the energy projects. The other things that the speaker brought out is the Department of Defense's budget. This is a very big concern to Fairbanks, which depends on Eielson Air Force Base and Fort Wainwright for a large part of our economy. These are very important to the nation, in my opinion, because we are on that Asian rim. Let's get as close as we can. Where is it smart to put our military? And we feel like we have one of the best locations. Our costs are high up there, but I think it's very important to the nation that we continue to look at the defense of the United States and where we are, and in case there is a conflict in Asia or Eastern Europe. And so these are real important things to the Interior. I'm excited about where we're headed this session. It seems like we have some good movement going for energy relief. Things like that are why we're here. And working with Bill on the budget side is very sobering at times because of the projection of where we're going with revenues.
Can I just amplify on what Representative Thompson said on the issue of the Interior and maintaining that that presence of the military for the national security purposes and an ancillary benefit? It is important to the economy. That's one of those issues. It may be Interior, but there is broad support from the members of chambers in Palmer and Wasilla and Chugiak-Eagle River, and there's another small little one down to the south, I think, in Anchorage. We're all united on supporting the Interior on this issue, because it is not viewed as a regional issue. It's viewed as a national issue of importance for defense, and it's as something that affects our whole state. And that's, you're finding that a common theme on how this these majorities and the people that we represent view it. It's not cherry-picking what's important to one region, but how there's an issue that's important to a region but has statewide implications and rallying behind. And you're seeing that as a more common theme in the legislature and in the public.
Well, I think that you are. I think it, you're not seeing it's a Fairbanks Anchorage issue. I think that they're looking at it as a statewide issue, that it does affect. You don't see Anchorage trying to clamor to pick up that fighter wing. They think it should be based in Fairbanks. So I think that that bodes well for all Alaskans, that it's just not about us, it's about everyone.
We were very pleased to see the governor come out and make a statement that as a fourth alternative, which the EIS had the three alternatives, the fourth alternative would be for an F-16 wing from Germany to be transferred to Eielson Air Force Base, which would enhance their mission. So that was real good to see the governor behind something like that, too.
With that, Bill, you got anything else you want to talk before we get to questions?
Just one issue. If I don't talk about fish, it seems like I'm incomplete. And I just would like to compliment the MATSU Advisory Commission on their real thoughtful and thought-provoking presentation about management resource issues and how they affect the Susitna drainage, and retired biologist Larry Engel, part of a career biologist with the Department of Fish and Game with predating statehood, presented the concerns, biological and economic, for the fisheries issues and what happens in the Susitna drainages ultimately affects our ability to have sustainable fisheries. So the folks that didn't see that, it is online. The MATSU Advisory Commission will be continue to be more engaged on presenting thoughtful solutions and through the budget process and through legislation. So we expect them to be a more active player.
Just for the record, state name and affiliation.
Becky Borth, the Associated Press. Mr. Speaker, you said in the next 2 weeks you expect the operating budget on the floor. Mm-hmm. Typically, or do you have a date in mind? Because I know typically the first week of March is Energy Council Week, and I wondered if it would come up then during the first week of March on the floor, and if you expect business to slow to a trickle like it often does during Energy Council Week, or if things will be different this year.
Well, and I think that what you're seeing right now is some of the and Bill can probably speak to it better than I can, because I'm not involved in depth with that the process up there anymore, but I think what you're seeing now is some of the subcommittees closing out within the next week or so. 2 weeks, you'll see all of the subcommittees close out. I believe that the chairman have asked that the all closeouts are by whatever date, and that they have a actual bill in front of the finance committee on, like, the, I believe it's the 11th of March. I would suspect they would have the bill in committee for a couple of days on amendments, and then probably have the bill to the floor somewhere around the 12th, 13th, maybe 14th of March. That's the schedule kind of right now as we've seen it.
Yeah, well, as always, we value the process of public input statewide. We'll have a structure set up so folks can testify by region. That seems to have, we've evolved into that. And a lot of healthy input and dialogue about through the amendment process and discussion of the budget. Not everybody will have had the input of the subcommittees, so we'll have our collective debate on it. But a lot of public process. The House is famous for that, having an abundance of process.
Bob, you had a question.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Bob Takash for Legislative Digest and Laws for the Sea. Representative Stoltz, on the budget process first, did the subcommittees get any particular kind of marching orders? I know you didn't submit it to CAPS particularly, but what were their directions for what they're supposed to bring back to the committee?
I guess the marching order is to go through a thoughtful and deliberative process and closely examine the increments and whether or not to take a very hard look at proposed increases and to take a thorough and thoughtful process. I guess that's the only directive. And I Representative Osterman is I think takes a pretty thoughtful approach to this process. I would never expect him to come up with an arbitrary number, because not every budget is equal in its importance or size or the ability to adjust if necessary. So the general marching orders were to be deliberative and thoughtful.
And on the MATSU presentation, do you expect that to manifest itself in some particular budget action you have in mind at this point?
I hope that it will be informative, thought-provoking, and illustrate a point of view that represents the population of an area that exceeds even Juneau in population. It's often is at the back burner. So we're approaching near 100,000 people in population, and often the management decisions affecting this vital area and the whole sustainable system, which is our constitutional mandate. It was our hope to have information on the table so members who aren't fortunate enough to live and work in MATSU saw some of the issues. And hopefully that will provoke more thoughtfulness and better deliberation in our process. That was my intent, putting good information on the table. Those who watched that, it was a scientific presentation. I tried to drag some politics out of Mr. Engel. That dog doesn't hunt with him. He's a biologist, and he will present what he sees as a professional biologist. And frankly, that's been healthy for me to make sure that I keep my focus on thoughtful deliberations on sound biology and sustainability. And because it's very tempting to get involved in politics, And the MATSU Advisory Commission's approach has not been fraught with politics or threats, and it's a very deliberative and thoughtful process trying to break into the debate. So I hope it unbeknownst to me, they did support a couple pieces of legislation, House Bill 98, and then the Alaska resident fisheries priority. But I hadn't asked them to do that. The MATSU Bureau did that on their own. So I've tried not to inject politics because Mr. Rangel and others are trying to, are putting up such a professional and thoughtful approach.
So does that mean we can expect that the Mat-Su or South Central legislators won't vote en masse to kill a commercial fisherman who the governor might nominate to the fish board, or a person with a commercial fishing pass?
Well, he's the capital punishment guy. So
as has been the case in the past.
Well, I mean, you mentioned a couple of times, and yesterday the Mat-Su folks said take politics out of the fish issues, but the record is that generally when someone with a pretty hardcore commercial fishing background gets nominated for a fish board seat, they are most often, their confirmation is most often rejected rather than a sports person being rejected.
So like is the, that not like something the, I think there's other factors, like the appointee from the Kenai Peninsula who brought up the issue of race and sexual assault. And I think some of their personal issues often dominate rather than their positions on fisheries. So, and I think you know which one I'm talking about. I don't want to embarrass anybody, but well, his letter there I think was more about. Anyway, I'll leave it at that. You know, it's uncomfortable talking about other people's misstatements.
Adam.
Adam Pinsker, KTUU. I wanted to go back to something you mentioned at the top of the news conference. Senator Murkowski's speech yesterday, she talked about sequestration, and she mentioned some services, federal services, that could be in jeopardy if it we do have those across-the-board cuts. How will it, if it does happen, how will this affect Alaskans in their day-to-day lives? I mean, what kinds of things could be in jeopardy here?
You know, and right now we don't know, because we don't know how they're going to really enact sequestration, whether they're just going to, you know, they have a number of options out there, I think, and one of those is to kick the can down the field a little farther. I think that next week is when sequestration is supposed to kick in, and I think there's 800, I don't remember the number as far as how many billions of dollars that it's going to take out of the system, but I think that what you're going to see is them punt again and try to delay that. I think that you said yesterday that there's talk going on out there that it may be delayed up to another 10 months, which you know, we don't know what that effect is going to be on Alaska. So as we're trying to put together our budget right now to take care of the needs of Alaska, we're trying to figure out what that exactly means and where it's going to affect us. Certainly could affect, you know, the Coast Guard. It could affect, as we see, our military bases. And certainly it could affect funding to Native health organizations other entities that use a lot of federal funds. So we don't know what that effect is or who or which Alaskans it's going to affect, but as they put it into play, it will start affecting Alaskans. And we as the state legislature, you know, then we're going to be required, or we're going to be asked to try to fill any holes that may appear. And as of yet, we don't know what those are, but It does cause us concern with the budget that we have and the declining revenue stream that we have. Pat?
Kind of question for the two, Forgy, Alaska Dispatch. Question kind of for the two co-chairs here. Have you looked at how sequestration may affect either the operating or capital budgets? There's a lot of federal money that comes through there.
Sure. I'm the only co-chair.
Yeah, here, I'm so not a co-chair. I'm on finance, but thanks for the promotion.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want that responsibility, though.
Representative Rossum may have a concern about that. But
Very, very early in the process, we had an individual from the National Conference of State Legislators. I can't remember her name, but before the Finance Committee, with preliminary discussions about sequestration, and there's we can get you the report on that if you want to call up House Finance. She made a presentation before the House Finance Committee, and frankly, sequestration is far more impactful than a BRAC commission, and the Base Relocations and Alignment Commission, far more impactful and less certainly has much more momentum. So it's a there was a lot of discussion on how, especially a lot of the social service funding, although some of that is held harmless, by the current administration. But there's a lot of factors in there, so we have we understand the cautions, and I think that's one of the not just this year, but in previous years, even prior to sequestration, we see the trend towards less federal money. We are being very cautious about accepting federal money without knowing its impacts, making it very clearly understood that there's a possibility that program will end if the federal money ends. Our budget is riddled with requests to replace federal money. So we have been very aware of that. Now I think we're going to see that concern on steroids with sequestration.
It's going to be
capital, maybe. Any thoughts there? Transportation?
Well, under this administration, the highway program, large states like Alaska, large western states with more sparse population, Alaska, Wyoming, that's part of the political payoff. Urban centers are sucking up a lot of the resources that our larger developing states with more primitive infrastructures. We are going to pay the price for some of the payoffs to the big city mayors, and that's the nature of the highway funding bills and the transportation bills. Alaska and larger states, western states, I think Perot called it a big sucking sound we're going to feel, and it's going to be going to the urbanized centers, which I guess I forget what the colors are of these states, but whatever it is, there is a very intentional political payoff on that, and we are not the beneficiaries. And I hope Senator Begich can continue to try to stem the tide, but that's got to be a challenge walking on those eggs for him.
It's going to be real tough for our state if we have that sequestration start to take out some federal funding in certain areas. We're going to have to look at the programs that money's going away, and are we going to try to backfill that shortfall? Is it a program that if we don't do that, it'll really have an impact on our people? And we're going to have to really dig into those programs and make sure that there's something that we can afford to continue, and make sure that we aren't getting rid of a program that could hurt our citizens. So it's going to be real tough. The transportation, new MAP 21, has changed the way that transportation dollars is spread out around to the state. So it's going to be a difficult moving forward problem if sequestration, and even without sequestration, MAP 21 is changing the outlook of transportation dollars for the state of Alaska.
I can amplify on that. Just overall on federal funds, when a state official presents a program, said, "Don't worry, this is federal funds," it will cause a heightened worry and concern and a lot more deep question, because the whole roadmap has changed on this funding.
So, Alexander Gutierrez, Alaska Public Radio Network. CAPS is sponsored you on Monday for project requests, and I was wondering to get a ballpark figure for what you're expecting them to be or what they've been historically.
Far greater than our capacity to fund.
Yes.
I did one count earlier, and there was already $4 billion. You hope and wish in one hand, and there's other things you have. Yeah, it's for folks. I've seen folks coming down earlier and more aggressive on capital budgets, and in some years, I guess when they know there's less, they try to be the first in the office. I am doing my best to lower expectations for people, including people that I represent. Hopefully we'll work with the administration, and he has his capital budget, which has large holes in it. Without really input from the legislative branch at this point, we will Senator Meyer and I and all of our respective colleagues will work on trying to get together a package that's sustainable and that reflects a whole different outlook on revenues than we faced before.
I don't see how we're going to be able to fund everything. I mean, we always would love to, but there's a lot of feel-good programs and projects that have been requested that probably won't get funded, but there's a lot of needs out there, and it's going to be very difficult to try to stretch what we do have to cover those needs that are necessary or something that would really do some good. I'm hoping to look at infrastructure projects that will have some meaning into the future and create some jobs.
So do you feel that there's really any chance of quenching really any of that with the state of the budget as it is? I mean, so it sounds like you're really trying to manage expectations, but...
I didn't.
Oh.
Well, I think there's always, you want to, I think you're going to see a more sobering approach to the capital budget. I think legacy projects, ones that would have long-term sustainability and very tangible benefits, are going to rise to a higher level in the process. And some of the things that you can, the expectations of taking care of a lot of local concerns and often operating type concerns and for nonprofits through the operating budget are going to have a tougher hurdle. You know, I think there's a healthy part of it. It's going to put our focus on what the public actually thinks the capital budget, the greater public that's not involved in the request frenzy every year, that they think what a capital budget should be, and it's infrastructure, legacy resource, long-term, larger projects that have greater statewide benefit and that have impacts on the economy for that are sustainable.
Matt Buxton, Fairbanks Daily News Miner. Representative Thompson, last year you passed the military zones bill. Have we seen any benefit from that? And additionally, talking about protecting military bases, are there any other things this year that the legislature can do to protect?
I had a conversation last week with the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and it sounds like they are going to apply to become a military facility zone in the up and around our area in Fairbanks and Fort Wainwright and Nielsen. And also, I had a conversation this week. It sounds like maybe Kodiak is moving forward with doing the same thing because of lack of housing for the Coast Guard there in Kodiak, and they're hoping to be able to utilize that military facility zone benefits that do show there. So there is some activity starting up in that direction. I don't know how much it will help them, but I'm hoping it will.
And are there other projects that you think the legislature could tackle this year that would provide additional benefit or make it more difficult to close the bases?
There is in the DMDA budget $300,000 a year right now to try to combat and educate the people that are making those decisions. So I'm hoping that they're doing a great job too, by the way. And I'm hoping to see that progress. There's a lot of activity as far as trying to figure out how can we make this better, what's going to happen. How do we enhance our missions in Alaska to make it so that they're more attractive to keep the bases open or not move our troops around too much? So there is a lot of activity in the building, in fact, talk and things that are positive.
I just want to add one thing. I think the rest of the state's united with the interior on energy as a linchpin of so many things, and that's going to be a fabric. That's a big part of any solution for keeping the military as well as keeping an economy, and we're committed to help the interior.
One of the things that the military does look at when they're looking at a bracking a base or something is they look at the other things in the community, such as air quality, which we have a problem up in the interior with, and clean energy would help clean up that air quality. If we can show them that we have a trucking project that's going to bring natural gas to help clean up the air, or the pipeline itself, the bullet line coming down, that helps us show them that we are taking care of our air quality problems, because that is one of the top items that they look at is where are they at and is there a problem? And the air quality is one of the things that the Army looks at when they're looking at an area.
Bob?
On budget questions, in Senate Finance Committee, they briefly brought up Arctic Power, and I believe the governor's request is for $300,000 to continue. And I don't want to quote Senator Meyer, but he said perhaps, or to the effect of that, perhaps it's time to put that aside until the environment in Washington is more favorable. Is Arctic Power, given their record of production over however many years it's been getting money, are they a project that's going to get likely to get funded this year?
I think everything's going to be scrutinized. And there have been some other approaches. Representative Pruitt looked at a private sector combination approach and through legislation. I don't think it got through the other body, but things are changed this year. So things that Representative Pruitt's more holistic solution on how to show that Alaskans are united, if folks from the public are also helping fund it. And I think groups like Arctic Power it's important. Alaska's interests are not always don't align with the oil industry, and when we're presenting our positions, I think it's important to have the Alaskan position. We're all for resource development, but we have different positions on a lot of the ancillary and even some of the core issues. So I don't want to rely on others to lobby for us. So that's one of the values of it. But like anything else in a budget where we have to exercise a more thoughtful approach and have comparative values and what gets funded, everything is going to get a look taken at it.
And Bob, if we look at what Arctic Power does, and in the realm that they do their work for the state, we have to realize that they're dealing with 400 and some odd congressmen and 100 senators, and just a turnover rate there, not only every 2 years but every 4 years, certainly creates a problem as far as people having information. If the subject does come up, and you haven't presented that information to a number of these offices, then what you find is they don't know. And if somebody doesn't know anything about a particular area or a particular project, they're more apt to vote no just because of lack of information. So I think it's important that whether it's Arctic Power or whether it's some other group, whether it be a private funded or whoever, that we make sure that we try to get that information out to the congressional offices and the Senate offices, and get in to see those folks as often as we can, just to keep the issue on the burner, so to speak.
Sounds like you're
saying that you. I think I've always supported funding for Arctic Power. Becky, one quick one, and then we've got to go.
I just wondered if there's been any consensus either within the caucus or with the Senate on a spending limit on the capital budget, or if that's still in progress.
I think we have a consensus on the direction that it's going to be a lot smaller than it's been in the past, and there's concern about I think there's resistance to use savings to fund the capital. So I think those are probably common threads. The components that make it up, that's always a source of a lot of discussion.
Well, folks, thanks for coming. We'll see you next Friday.